Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 15 of the Self-Help Podcast, your weekly dose of brain food. I've got it written here. What do you think of that?
Brain food, yeah.
No, we need to work on that.
It's better than dog food.
I could do the little jingle at the start.
Doodle-doo-doo.
Well, we've got that, the music and the lady introducing it, but just some short... I was trying to think.
I'll bring my guitar next time.
Brain food's not... it's all okay, but we'll work on that. How are you doing, Sean?
I'm very good. No, I'm very good. Very good. Life's very good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, episode 15. This week we're going to be talking about money, whether it's a positive force or not. Again, hopefully another interesting topic coming up. Before that, we'll talk about our week. We'll have a little news feature to go for. But before that, I'll also want to thank a couple of reviews, or three reviews, which we've had this week. Yeah, quick shout out to, in the UK, actually, all three of them. Chris Keptic, Optic CBA, and Jody Barcher-Lang. Thank you to all of those reviews. Fantastic. Jody has actually suggested a topic. Why do people go shopping in their pyjamas?
Jody, do you go shopping in your pyjamas?
Yeah, I've never done that. I have seen it done. I don't know if it's just a UK thing or a kind of a Liverpool thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
when I was a kid, it was a class thing. You're a bit common if you went out in your pyjamas with a fag in your mouth and your hair in rollers.
We'll add that one to the list of episode ideas. Thanks, Jody. Before we get going, I just want to say my father-in-law, Gwynvor, listened to the show probably for the first time last week. I think he really enjoyed it.
Right.
My father-in-law is a church minister.
Yeah, lovely guy.
Top guy. Interesting guy too. Really knows his stuff. It's kind of interesting, the link between what we're doing and what he does every week. He obviously does a weekly sermon.
Yeah.
So I was chatting to him on holiday about the kind of similarities, how we work. And he has, you know, ideas for what he's going to talk about in weeks to come and all that.
Yeah.
Interesting. He actually picked you up on something, Sean. I want to hold you out here because he obviously knows his theology.
Yeah.
And he said one of your descriptions of the history of holiday and what holiday is was a bit off the mark.
Okay.
So I just want to say, just check your facts next time.
Okay. So, what was the fact?
I'll check with Gwynvor and I'll put the proper version up on the show notes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Gwynvor. You need to email me next time, not Ed.
Two more strikes and you're out, Sean, and I'm getting Gwynvor in. Yeah, thanks for listening, Gwynvor. Appreciate the feedback. Sean, what have you been up to this week?
Two things I want to say. The first one is it's Pam's birthday today, and Pam is my mother-in-law, who's a lovely lady. We talk a lot on these casts about the idea of love and positivity, and she's one of those people that embodies that whole thing. She's everybody's mother.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's looked after so many kids and so many people throughout her life, and she is just a bundle of love. She's amazing.
Yeah,
so happy birthday, Pam. Have a fabulous day today.
Yeah, happy birthday. Yeah. And also, I don't know if I've ever properly said thank you. She made a cake for Beth and my wife's birthday.
All right. 30th. Yeah, she makes amazing cakes.
It was the most incredible chocolate cake I've ever tasted. So thank you properly for that.
Yeah, we talk about being in the present, and when she makes sponges, she's really in the present because they are the lightest sponges. I try and make sponges, they're like bricks, but hers are amazing.
Beautiful.
Yeah. The other thing is I'm frustrated because I'm trying to get this studio done. We were supposed to put the windows in the roof at the weekend to do the conversion, and rain stopped play. Well, it was the threat of rain that stopped play because in the end it didn't rain. and the whole thing was cancelled.
It was unreliable weather forecast.
Yes,
surely
terrible,
not.
Terrible. They wouldn't take the roof off, which is a shame.
How hard can it be, taking the roof off?
Yeah, no, it's the rain that was the problem. Yeah, what about your week?
Yeah, I've had a pretty good week. I had one of those rare weekends when we kind of didn't need to be anywhere. We could just do what we wanted and just chill out.
Magical.
Which is just cool. I also reckon this week I might have taken the best photo I've ever taken. I like my photography. And I managed to capture this little moment of my little lad. A lot of my photos at the moment do tend to be of a certain young man. and I grabbed one just a couple of days ago. It's on Instagram.com/EdwardLamb. I'll put the link up. But it was the right place at the right time. He stepped into this pool of light, of sunlight that was blasting through the window. And snapped it. And I knew as soon as I got it, it was going to be a cool one. So yeah, that's how I kind of live in the present.
It looks amazing. It does. Mm. It looks like it could be an oil painting.
Yeah, it's been likened to a Rembrandt painting, would you believe it?
Yeah, no, I can understand that. Yeah.
So I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
Pretty happy with that. Yeah, so cool week. What about the news, Sean?
News. I think the funniest thing for me, and it runs into our topic today, is the idea that by 2016 we're going to have plastic banknotes.
Yeah, I saw this last night.
Wipe clean banknotes. And the funniest thing of all was that they'll go through the washing machine so we can now launder money legally. But that idea that we've now got plastic notes, I wonder how long they'll last.
Well, they say they will last 2.5 times longer than
the paper
current lot, which I thought it would have been longer than that.
Yeah,
they sound kind of indestructible. You can't tear them or anything.
Right.
I guess you can melt them, but you wouldn't really want to do that.
I wonder whether they're harder to counterfeit.
I would assume they've got to be.
Yeah.
Something to do. The Bank of England governor is this Canadian chap, isn't he, or is he American?
I don't know. He's not English.
No, but he was similar in Canada, similar role, and he introduced plastic banknotes over there.
Oh right. Okay.
Canada are one step ahead there.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Plastic banknotes. I have been reading about it's an independent article, revealed the world's happiest nations. Basically, it's one of these lists of showing order of who where the happiest people on Earth are. I think all but one of the top 10 were European. The one that wasn't was Australia, I think, hit in number 10. Denmark, number one.
Right.
A lot of Scandinavian countries high up there.
Yeah.
They seem to have their heads screwed on, those guys, man. They know how to live, don't they?
Yeah, it was interesting, Robert, being over in Sweden.
Oh, yeah, you said.
Doing his teaching stuff. And the things that he was saying when he came back sounded wonderful.
Education-wise, they're really quite out there.
But that's the beginning of how people develop, isn't it? So that if they're doing good work with their kids, then the kids are likely to be happier when they're older.
Yep.
I need to go to Sweden and have a look.
I'd love to get that part of the world, Norway as well, and just beautiful part of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, need to go.
Yeah, the bottom 10, all African countries except for one. I think Syria was in there, which is kind of understandable.
Yeah. So where does Britain fall then?
UK was 22nd, 22. 20. Yeah, and the US, number 17. The US had dropped 6 or 7 places, assuming that it was because of economics and kind of unemployment, that kind of thing. UK 22, not too bad, but we could do better, right?
Yeah. And how much of that is, in terms of the work that we're doing at Live in the Present, is about how each of us faces the day, so that we're putting the positive into the day rather than being the recipients of negative news and then feeding that? You know?
I think there is more of a push in governments to kind of have a different metric for well-being of a country, not just economic.
Yeah.
Well-being and happiness, which is, it's got to be a good thing, right?
Yeah.
I know we've got Action for Happiness over here in the UK, which was launched by the current government, which is, they do some good work.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Or not. Maybe you might think it's a load of rubbish, this list, but have a look and see what you think.
Yeah. No, I go with that, and I see the issues about happiness being related to how each of us engages with the world. But we'll have a look at that in money as well, in what we're going to talk about.
We will.
It's relevant, isn't it?
Before we do, just quickly, there's a movement on the go. If you listen to this podcast on the day of release, which is September the 12th, you've already missed it by a day, but it's not too late. September the 11th, there's something called the 21-Day Kindness Challenge. If you go to kindspring.org, you can find out more about it, but it's a push to have a real focus around the world on being kind and doing random acts of kindness, eh?
Well, one of the things, when we were talking about this earlier, one of the things that came back to me in trying to do kind things for people was Billy Connolly in one of his shows. He's talking about his grandmother, who was a lovely lady, and she would always go out of her way to help people. And he said one day when he's a kid, they're walking in the street and this child runs out in front of a car or big traffic, and the mother just drops a bag, the grandmother, and runs after this kid, and she grabs hold of the kid and runs across the road with this struggling kid, puts him down on the pavement on the side, and gives him a good clap round the head for being an idiot and running across the road. And it turns out that the guy was a little dwarf with a moustache who ended up telling her off, yeah. But maybe acts of kindness sometimes, if they're not focused, can backfire on you.
Well, he still would have got hit by a car, so she's done him a favour.
Yeah, I guess.
Very good. We'll see if we can find that one on our YouTube page, see if it's a stand-up.
Very funny.
Yeah, so be kind. I mean, if people are listening to this, because I know that people listen to the show, you know, weeks behind when they go out, which is cool. You can still go out and be kind, we should say. You don't have to stick to their 21-day...
Yeah, I think that the idea of focusing on what can I do today as a kind act in the universe is a very, very positive thing. I don't see that as unobtainable for anybody.
Not at all, no.
Yeah.
And I've got this Lift app where I have my daily habits, six, and I haven't added a habit to it for a long time, but if I did add one, it probably would be random act of kindness.
Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Think of all the people around, anyone that's listening here, people around you who are maybe on their own.
Yeah.
And could really do with a cheery voice and a hello or a cup of tea or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, we will move on to our topic of the week. And we're going to be talking about money, whether it's a positive force or not. And I should say this topic was kick-started. I've wanted to talk about money for a while on the show, but it was kind of kick-started a couple of weeks ago when we had an email from a regular listener. About my title, you know, in the little jingle at the start, I'm introduced as entrepreneur Edward Lamb. And the listener, who I'll talk about more in a bit because he's got a cool website actually, basically said, he kind of hinted at, and he was very polite about it, but hinted at that me calling myself an entrepreneur left a bit of taste with the show, in that it hinted that, you know, we're trying to make a load of money from this, which, live in the present as a business, but we don't push it too hard.
Yeah.
But it got me thinking, and it was really valuable kind of information, and I'm not sure what we're going to do about it, really, and I welcome everyone's feedback. The chap who emailed us has a cool website. His name is Vidhi Kadampa. He's a modern Buddhist, and his website is dailylamrim.com. Kind of puts daily meditations on there. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, it is a lovely site. It's good.
Doing some good work, actually.
Yeah, brilliant.
Every day puts a little meditation up there. Really cool. So thank you for the feedback. But, Sean, where do we start? What's an entrepreneur for you?
Well, I checked it out after we had that email. I was looking at it. And the original entrepreneurs were people that would bankroll and put on performances. They'd either be musical performances or plays or whatever. And they would stand the money for it, and actually they became the impresarios that became the film magnates in the end.
Yeah.
But that's where it started, was the idea, was who was going to take the risk to do it, and someone has to do that, or things don't happen.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at the definition, I've put it here, that an entrepreneur is a person who organises, operates and assumes the risk for a business venture. Which is, pretty cool. On edwardlamb.com, which is my blog that I hardly ever update, I actually call myself an underachieving entrepreneur.
you should go and change that immediately.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be overachieving, just an achieving.
Just an achieving.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mentioned it last week when we were kind of hinting at what was coming up this week, that there's a difference between in the US and the UK, seemingly, in kind of attitudes towards money and entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
There's a bit of a cynicism over on this side of the Atlantic, maybe.
It's a weird mix, because lots of people, certainly people I work with, that want money. They want all the supposed benefits that money would bring, and yet they're very critical of people that have money. So, and it's a very strange idea that if you don't have it, you're in one camp, and if you do have it, you're in the other. But we look at it with envy, perhaps.
Yeah, and it can start early on, can't it, in your life, from certain phrases that we are taught as children?
Yes. And that's, you go to your parent and you say, can I have so-and-so? And they say, what do you think, money grows on trees? Do you think I'm made of money?
Mm-hmm.
You know, think I am Rockefeller? You know, it's all that kind of stuff, isn't it? What kind of things did you hear when you were a kid?
Yeah, all those. I've got it's the root of all evil.
Which is
pretty dramatic.
Yeah. Money is the root of all evil.
I don't think I actually ever heard that one. I mean, I've heard it, but my parents didn't tell me that one. Yeah, like we say, it's these things are kind of drummed into us early on.
Yeah, and they create an attitude to money. If people tell you that actually, no, money is an okay thing. To me, money is neutral. Money is like a knife. That you can use a knife to create a wonderful work of art that would please thousands of people, or you can use it to chop someone up into little bits. The knife itself is neutral. That isn't the knife, it's the person behind the knife.
Yeah.
That is the energy, and that's what money is. Money, to me, is a form of energy that becomes a magnifier. If someone is a nasty person and they get a load of money, it just means they can be more nasty. If someone is a good person and they get a load of money, they can be an even better good person.
Yeah.
Yeah, it isn't the money. The money is neutral, just energy, it's just stuff.
The concept of money is quite fascinating, really. We won't talk about the history of it here, partly because you might get it wrong. But also because it's pretty complex and it goes way back. But there are some cool documentaries around that, that you can get on. There's a couple on YouTube, the BBC, Masters of Money, Money and Power. And we're going to talk about a resource later on, which is a really in-depth one, but fascinating.
Yeah, brilliant.
Documentaries, aren't
they? Brilliant, yeah. If you look at a note in Britain, the note says on it, I promise to pay the bearer on demand the sum of, if it's £5 or £10. If you actually took that into the bank and you said, I've got my token here and I want to pick up my £10, the person would look at you like you were bonkers.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be a feasible concept, because in that sense, money doesn't exist. It's an energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a concept. And
sure.
The idea, I've got lots of these tokens, these bits of paper that, in a sense, become quite meaningless.
Yeah, it's weird. I used to work in an electrical store in Currys, and it's obviously pretty rare these days that people will pay with a cheque, but sometimes, people will pay for a £600-800 TV with a bit of paper.
Yep.
With some stuff scribbled on it.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I didn't think much of it at the time, but it's quite a weird kind of concept, isn't it?
Yeah. And we're exchanging energies, aren't we? That I'm exchanging these bits of paper for this good that I'm buying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But that's also true if you look at a business. I mean, like Live in the Present, what we do is we do things. And those things we do that we hope are positive, and people compensate us for the things that we do by giving us these bits of paper.
Yeah.
Or electronic bits of paper.
Electronic. We get little emails every now and again.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got the link here between money and anxiety for people can be pretty huge. If you've got perhaps not a great relationship with money and you're not all that wise with it, it can get you into a bit of trouble, eh?
It would seem to me that the problem that we mainly get with anxiety is when somebody has overspent. They've spent more money than they have. And one of the things about our society in terms of the way that we use this energy of money is that we create the future in the present. So that by using credit or a credit card, we can project forward to a time when we would have had money in the future and draw that into the present so we can have that thing now. And that's exactly the same definition of anxiety, because when you project forward from the present into the future and you live negative futures in the present time, then you develop anxiety. So
yeah.
Anxiety and credit are the same psychological emotional energy.
Wow, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. It's so that it's easy once you start to project forward. I mean, how many people in our society, there's a big thing about owning your own house. It doesn't happen in other European countries so much. People live in apartments and stuff like that. But over here, you know, you want to have your own house, but that means you have to pay your mortgage off.
Mm-hmm.
And for most people, that's a big deal. It's a 20, 30, 35-year experience of trying to pay it off. And there are different kinds of mortgages that can be more stressful. If you've got an interest-only mortgage, you never actually pay off the capital.
Yep.
All those kinds of things. And the assumption is that the property will increase in value, which will give me the space to be able to pay it off and have some cash. But actually, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
The economy collapses and then you stop.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I can relate to that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we bought one right at the peak and we bought an apartment. Whoopsie. But live and learn, eh? My father-in-law, Gwynfor, and if you're wondering about that name, it sounds like it's someone out of Lord of the Rings, doesn't he? He's Welsh.
Yeah.
But he gave me a book called The 60-Minute Debt Buster by a chap called Rob Parsons, which is a shortened version of a longer version of the book, which is available. It's practical tips on how to manage your finances and if you're in trouble, what you can do. Yeah, your role as a therapist, how much kind of financial planning? Do you have to help people with that kind of thing, or advise?
Well, no, you can't. Legally, you can't. In this country, okay. You have to be licensed to do that. But I do get a lot of people that I have to refer on to either the Citizens Advice Bureau or some kind of specialist. The issues about money in my world predominantly at the moment with clients is about couples splitting up and having to work out how they divide the assets of the family or the relationship and how that works for everybody so that they can go on and live their lives. And that is a hugely stressful, anxiety-provoking situation for both sides. And very rarely, people very often go into that process thinking, you know, we're going to be fair, we're going to be equitable, and by the end of it, they're tearing each other's throats out, or they're giving it to solicitors who are doing the same thing for them.
Blimey.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's pretty messy, good.
Yeah. But from my point of view, when we're talking about money, and we're talking about the energy of money, if you look at it positively, money is the byproduct of what we do. So most of the people that are listening to this will be wage slaves, as in you go and work for somebody. What that means is that you sell your time to a person for the wage they're prepared to pay you, for the amount of hours they're prepared to pay it to you for. Mm-hmm. And that is your money. If money becomes something which is bigger than that, in the sense of people are multi-streaming, they're doing maybe many things, they may have a paid job, but they may be doing other things as well. So they've got multiple strings of income. So the financial world starts to change. They're starting to be able to manipulate it. And if an entrepreneur is somebody who's prepared to take a risk and do something, if you look at anybody who is successful financially, that's what they've done. They've taken the risk. They've done something to set something up. And the risk may have been just the time. The risk may have been that they put their house on the line. You were talking to me earlier on about Chris Evans.
Yeah. DJ, radio DJ over here, and kind of personality in he, but
yeah,
he's one of those guys who just risk doesn't seem to faze him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think, I can't remember the story, but I've read his autobiography, and you know, he went into a bank one day or to an investor and just asked for £80 million.
I read that, and then he was amazed because they actually gave it to him.
And made a fortune from a radio station, and I think he lost it all at one point, or you know, he went broke. But just these guys, Chris Evans is one, but also, I mean, even higher up, chaps like Richard Branson, you know, who, I mean, obviously massively wealthy now, but there have been points in his life where it could really have backfired on him. But he's been like, what the hell?
If you look at people like Bill Gates, I like him as an example, as someone who has made a lot of dosh, but has attempted to do things positively with it. And I guess that if we solve the AIDS issue in humanity, it would be down to the money that Bill Gates has put into the research. And it's okay feeling negative about someone who's got a lot of money like that, but if they are actually putting that into things that are positive, then it has to be a good thing, because I don't have the money to put into the research for AIDS.
Nope.
You know, if I did, then maybe I would. But if we solve it, because he's done it, he's put the money in. Yeah, and that's not a bad thing.
You can't knock that, can you? And you were saying earlier on, every time you buy a Microsoft product, you kind of see it as a little...
Yeah.
Donation.
See, that's to me is a bit like lotto tickets. Like every so often, I think, I'll get a lotto ticket. You know, you never know, you might win it, kind of thing. But the way I do it is I think, okay, you put a pound into the lotto fund, and what you're doing is you're putting money into other people, maybe going, woo, I've won the lotto.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's not a bad thing.
No.
Yeah, it's almost like contributing to something when I buy a lotto ticket.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe one day I'll win it, and I'll go, woo, but I don't know. And then what will I do with the money? Because then I can either use it positively to enhance things, or it can become a negative thing.
And you owe me a tenner as well, don't
you? Yeah. Yes, I'll give you 12.
Interest.
Yeah. And one of the things in that is that there's a guy called Harv Eker, I'm going to come back to later, but in his work he talks about your money blueprint. What's your money blueprint? And if you think about what you earn as a wage, say, is 15,000 a lot, or do you need 20, or is it 25 or 50? You know, do you need 100? Do you need 200? Do you need 250? What is the amount that makes you think, okay, that's good? You know, I'm okay now. I'm rich. And people are very, very varied in that. The what is it that you would need to make to feel comfortable?
Yeah, I know a guy who I haven't seen more. I've done work for a chap who his figure of being broke is probably down to my last million and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's been up and down. I've spoken to him. He's been up and down so many times. He's in the restaurant game, actually. And he's been broke and then he's been a millionaire and then he's been broke again and then he's been back to a millionaire. And he's just a regular guy. He's a working class guy from, well, not too far from here. But he's just got the knack. And
yeah. He has to learn the knack of keeping it.
He has now. I think it's been a while since.
I told you before about I had a client years ago who was anxiously depressed, really, and halfway through the therapy we were doing, announced that they'd won 1.4 million on the lotto, and the attitude was, "Oh my God, I've got to worry about that now as well."
Yeah.
So all that the money did was amplify the anxieties and the problems. It just made life worse. It didn't make it easier.
Yeah, the money blueprint stuff that Harv Eker goes on about is quite interesting, because with people like that who come into a lot of money randomly and aren't used to it, they quickly get themselves back to where they started.
Yeah. What he would say is that if your money blueprint is that 100,000 is a lot of stuff, then however much you get, you will get rid of it until you get down to 100,000, then you stop.
Okay.
So it comes down to what's your blueprint, what's your normality. And one of the things he would say is that if you're going to develop your money blueprint and become financially successful, you have to up that figure. You have to get it so that the idea of having a million or 2 million or 10 million is normal rather than some ridiculous mountain that you can't climb.
Yeah, I mean, if you move on to The Secret and that kind of philosophy, the criticism of it is that you just kind of close your eyes and think of a figure and it'll land on your doorstep.
Yeah.
It doesn't work like that.
No, right. No. You have to do something. You know, there's a Quaker, it's a Quaker saying, where they say, OK, first you pray and then you move your feet.
It's definitely Quaker.
Yeah, definitely Quaker.
We're going to be checking up.
Yes, perhaps Gwynver will let me know that. But that idea that it's okay having that positive focus and asking for the help of the universe, if you like, you know, but then you actually have to do something.
Yeah.
You can't sit in the front room and say, I will have a ham sandwich, because it won't drop in your lap. You have to do something to get the ham sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah, things run together.
Yeah, and you've got to create things of value. I mean, there's all sorts of things on the web. I'm sure we've all seen little banners to click on and maybe dodgy emails that have come in, you know, make $3,400 a day on Google, make it sound like the easiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
But it's not.
No.
I've tried. Many years ago. You've got to create things of value, hey? And
I think that if you create something which is valuable to other people, whether it's a sandwich or whether it's an app or a product, if it's of value to other people, people will buy it.
Yeah.
And you will get a compensation for your effort, and the compensation is the profit.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people do that a little, some people do it a lot. And we mentioned before the guys that did Angry Birds.
Yeah.
That it was their 51st app.
Oh, my word. It's incredible, that story.
Yeah. And they'd tried so many times to hit the button and hadn't done it, but then they get to that one. And
it was 51st or 52nd, but you don't hear these stories, do you? You just see the success of people, and it can be easy to just think, oh, you know, I can never get there. But then when you delve deeper into the story and you hear about how much effort and hard work and how much failure has been involved,
yeah,
but that's all part of the journey. You've got to go through that.
But the thing also is, when you look at it, it's like the guys that produce those apps. I'm making the assumption in the story as I read it, was that the guy's fulfillment and enjoyment was about creating apps.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that this one hit the button and they made a load of dosh out of it is a bonus. And they've gone on to do more apps. And that's the point, isn't it?
Cuddly toys and theme parks and TV shows.
Yeah. And how many people? I mean, all the kids I know play Angry Birds.
Yeah.
And love it.
I was into it big time for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's if you create that level of fulfillment for people, then you get compensated for it. It's one of the natural flows of energy in the universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and money for me is energy. It flows round, but it only flows round as long as we use it. If you take a note, a dollar, a pound, a euro, whatever, and you do something with it. It's like planting a seed. You release that energy into the whole economy. If people stop releasing energy, then you get recession. It stops.
Mm-hmm.
The flow stops. And it only starts to work again once people start spending and using to allow the energy to flow around the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're in the midst of one of those recessions at the moment where everybody suddenly went, and stopped spending their dosh, and everything slows down and stops. A bit like cars on a motorway, isn't it? They concertina up, stop. And then they have to start off again.
It feels like we're just kind of getting going again now.
Yeah, yeah. People are starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, all the news reports are getting a bit more positive.
Yeah. Weird.
I mentioned earlier on, Sean, when we were discussing the build-up to this, Oniomania. Oniomania. Why couldn't they give it an easier name?
It's Latin. This is the
technical term for retail therapy.
Yeah, but the manias, they're related to all kinds of things. Like if you pull your hair out, you're a trichlomaniac. It's all that everyone's got a name. When people are starting to use retail therapy, what they're actually doing is firing up the dopamine centre in the brain. So they develop this love relationship with an object, and they really, really want it, and they get more and more dopamine. It makes them feel more and more ecstatic until they actually go and grab it and do it, and then the drive goes away.
What do you suggest as a replacement for that dopamine hit?
There's loads of ways of getting dopamine, and dopamine is the love drug, really, and it's doing things that make you feel good, including loving and generosity and giving, that give you dopamine hits.
Random acts of kindness.
Yeah, yeah, which is where we started with that, with the programme, the Turn-On Day programme. The idea that I can create dopamine, but people will get it from positive experience. Certainly things like religion give you dopamine.
Yeah.
The negative things are things like heroin and alcohol and nicotine. They give you dopamine, which is why people go for it.
Nice.
I mean, I have clients, and this is quite common when you get bipolar clients who will be flying high and they suddenly dip down low and they want to get up again. So they will go and do retail therapy. And for someone who's very bipolar, that can mean going and spending several thousands in a day shopping. So I will have clients who will go out and do that and come back with these masses of stuff. And then over the next couple of weeks, they and their parents and relatives will take it all back again and get the money back.
Wow.
But what it does is it provides the dopamine that lifts the person out of the negative hole. Yeah, so in a way, the big retail complexes are actually performing a medical function, a psychological function, allowing people to get the dopamine going.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, do you actually recommend this as therapy then?
No, I don't. I observe it as what happens. But
you don't tell people, make sure you don't open it, don't wear those shoes or you won't get a refund.
Well, it's true. If you mustn't open the packets, I guess. Yeah.
Just thinking about technology and how that's affected the view of money or how money works in the last, I was thinking 20 years or so, how much it's changed. And I can't imagine a time when debit cards weren't around or you couldn't check your bank account when you're on the move on your phone just to, you know, see how you're doing or if a direct debit's coming out, that kind of thing. I can't imagine a time before all that, but it must have been a wonderful, simple time.
Well, I don't know. It's what did you do with your money? My grandfather, and he had obviously come through the Depression and was like a whole load of people. They didn't trust the banks, you know, the bank collapse of the 1930s. And when he died in his house, in the kitchen, there was a kitchen table with an oil cloth on it. And everybody had eaten at that table for years. But nobody realised until they took the oil cloth off that underneath were layers of £5 notes and layers of newspaper building up. And it was like a couple of inches thick, this stuff. And there was thousands of pounds underneath the oil cloth that nobody knew was there.
Wow.
And that was his bank.
Yeah, I was speaking to a chap at a wedding a few weeks ago. I'd met him before, but I had a chat, and he was telling me how he'd bought a business out recently and he needed to go to his dad to borrow a bit of money. And his dad said, yeah, went upstairs into the loft, rummaged around a bit, came back down and handed over £10,000 and said, like, let me know if you need any more. How much you got up there, Dad? He must have been thinking, but yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
That's just a sign of, the mistrust of the system, I guess, isn't it? And,
yeah.
If you watch the news and, obviously these big cycles in the economy that go on, it's quite easy to mistrust all these things.
Yeah. And it's that idea about we're saving for a rainy day. you know, which is a madness. Why don't we save for a sunny day and enjoy it?
Yeah.
And but people keep all this money squirreled away because disaster is around the corner, and they can point to lots of examples in the world. I think there's a much easier economy than keeping money stashed under your blankets, and that's the idea that if we all look after each other, we're all okay. And from that point of view, the money doesn't become so important if we're looking after each other. And maybe in these acts of kindness that we're talking about over these 21 days, we're looking at being thoughtful about the people around us. And maybe there are people around us that do need food. I mean, we're in a situation in Britain now where we're having food banks, food stores, where people can go and on a charity basis. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
The biblical model... Grenville, would you have me out on this one, was that you should give 10% of your net income away in charity. And charity comes from the word caritas, which is Latin, which mm-hmm. means love, the giving of love, caring for other people.
Just share a bit of energy, hey?
Yeah, and I try and do that in many ways. I do charitable things. I do actually give money away, but I do things in my time. And I offer my therapeutic time free as well to people that have no money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I try and do that as a model.
Some self-help takeaway tips here. I mean, just thinking about people need to kind of reassess their relationship with money, or just kind of step back and think about how you view it and what you're doing with your dosh.
Yeah, very, very important. And I think that everybody at some point needs to sit down with a financial advisor-type person and just run through what they're doing.
Yeah, especially if these things... Yeah, keeping you awake at night and money issues then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so certainly sitting down and doing a bit of therapy is pretty good. But overall, the object of the therapy, 9 times out of 10, is what are you doing with your life?
Yeah.
And if what you're doing with your life is fulfilling, then usually the production of money goes alongside that as a byproduct of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we could go down the route now of saying, oh, you don't like your job, okay, quit. Quit and do something else. But sometimes people might not value the work that they do, but if they just looked at it a different way, you could see that you actually are having a good impact on the world.
Yeah.
Maybe you're working in a supermarket, you know, stacking food on shelves, but that food's feeding a lot of people, you know.
But also you're interacting with people, aren't you? And those acts of kindness might actually be interactions with the customers or with your work colleagues.
Mm.
Yeah, that it can be a joyful thing. I think that the other thing that's important is that if you look at the process of change, when people come along in therapy and they're saying, I want to change my life, usually it's a 2-year cycle. You're looking at that kind of time. People can't just quit and go, I'm going to go and do something else. Usually it takes about 2 years to get themselves sorted out and to might be a bit of training or whatever, but to make that change.
Okay, then, quick little summary then, a bit of fun. do you think the title should stay entrepreneur? Am I an entrepreneur or should I get rid?
Do you feel comfortable with it?
Yeah. At first I was a bit nervy. It's not what I call myself when I'm introduced, you know. When
Hi.
People say, what do you do? I say, I'm an entrepreneur. Maybe it will be one day. But I'm comfortable with it. I think it should stay. What do you reckon?
Entrepreneur. I'm comfortable with it staying on one proviso.
Yeah.
That you take that underachieving entrepreneur bit off on the other side. That's a negative image.
It is.
I love that idea of, hi, my name's Ed, I'm an entrepreneur. And one of my lads, Joshua, was born with 6 toes on 1 foot. One had to be removed, plastic surgery. And the other day he said to someone, hi, my name's Josh, I have 6 toes on 1 foot.
Brilliant. What a leading.
Yes. Yes. Pick-up lines.
Yeah,
I'm an entrepreneur. It's what you feel comfortable with, isn't it? Because if someone says, oh, what's that? Then you know what you're doing, don't you?
Yeah.
And it's what we're presenting, isn't it? I'm Sean, I'm a psychotherapist.
Mm.
That's what I do. You know, entrepreneurship is what you do.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it should stay, but let's get some feedback, you know.
Yeah.
Send us a quick email, podcast@livingthepresent.co.uk.
Yeah. Yes. Should Ed be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, yes or no.
Or you could pick a title for him.
Yeah,
if you'd like a title.
Anything you want. I'm easy.
We could give a prize for the best title.
Yeah, let us know though, because I'd be quite interested too if anyone else has got any, connotations or what they think. And...
Yeah, yes. What does entrepreneur mean to you?
Mm.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, let's wrap it up there.
All right.
We're moving on, and I'm really tired. So I should have mentioned earlier on, if I sound a bit groggy, my little lad had me up. Our human alarm clock went off a bit earlier than expected this morning.
So Ed's been drinking lots of coffee to stay awake.
Yeah,
so.
Getting there. But that was a cool little chat, Sean. Have you got a resource of the week for us?
I want to go two things, really. First one is the Harvecker, which is the thing we talked about earlier on, which you can get as a book. It's called The Millionaire Mind, and the link will be up for that. But you can also get it as an audio, and the audio is good because the way Harv Eker presents his stuff is funny. He has a turn of phrase and a way of saying things which makes me laugh.
Yeah.
And that's really worth doing because it makes you think about what's your attitude to money, where's it come from? And the other one that I think is a good resource, and I do use this quite a lot with clients, is by Joe Vitale, who comes from The Secret, and he wrote a book called The Attractor Factor.
I think I've got one of his books on my shelf there. Not that one.
Was it The Key one?
The Key?
Okay,
The Attractor Factor. I've heard of that one.
Yeah, The Attractor Factor is good because it takes you through the process of questioning you so that you have to understand each part of your process. You have to write things down. Okay, having done that, now go and do this bit. And it's a good way of getting you to look at things. And I use it with clients that are attempting change. And although the book, in a way, it tends to be focused a bit around money, you can actually use it for anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's the goal, the object is immaterial. He's using money for that. And that's okay. That's right. But it's a good book.
Cool. And yeah. I briefly mentioned it earlier, but there's a documentary series and a book called The Ascent of Money, which I know you're a fan of. It was on Channel 4 a few years ago now.
Yeah, I've got it on iPad from iTunes.
Cool.
And it's something that I do listen to every now and again. It just reboots the system, really.
Yeah.
It explains about why it is the way that it is.
Yeah,
and it makes you realise...
Niall Ferguson, who's a journalist, historian, good guy, Scottish guy, did it. It's an amazing documentary, quite an in-depth book. And there's loads of video interviews with him on YouTube as well, which you should check out if you can. We'll put the links up for you to have a look. But I think that'll do it for the week.
And
yeah,
you need to go and have some sleep.
So. Yeah, I'm going to go have a nap.
The siesta.
Get one of your meditation files on the go.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll need any coaxing. I think I'll be out like a light. Right, so for more information about the work that we are doing, visit livingthepresent.co.uk. You'll also find all the links to everything we've just discussed. Reach out to us, email us, tweet us, say hello, leave us feedback, leave us a review on iTunes if you can, that would be cool.
And if we make any mistakes... Let us know.
Yeah, because we will correct them.
Yeah, and we're learning.
Yeah, we are.
We're all learning.
We're enjoying it. Sean, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Ed.
And listeners, we shall see you all again next week.
Yeah, bye everybody.
See ya.
Bye.